Welcome back. I'm Jasmine Babers, founder of Love Girls Magazine.
And I am Michaela Hugh Shaw, the vice president of the board for Love Girls Magazine.
And you're listening to Love Girls, the podcast, and we're so excited you're tuning in.
Yes, thank you so, so much for listening. So today we are going to talk about a controversial topic, and that is cultural appropriation. And by definition, cultural appropriation is the adoption of elements of one culture by members of another culture. So when that can become really problematic is when you have a dominant culture who appropriates the opposite of a dominant culture. A disadvantaged culture.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's systematic, basically.
It is.
Yeah. So, Michaela, can you describe your culture in one word?
I would have to say diverse.
Yeah.
Just because I come from such a diverse background, being True. Biracial, but having so many different ethnicities attached to my family's history, I would have to say it's very diverse. Yeah. And I love that.
No, I feel that.
It keeps things interesting.
Yeah.
What would you use to describe yours?
The first word that came to mind was black. Right. And then the second word, I'm cheating. I'm doing two. But then unique. Right. Being black, we've kind of created our own culture. It's newer. It's fresh because we got our culture taken away from us during slavery. And so we kind of had to create our own culture. And so I really feel like because it's so new and so fresh, whilst other cultures have been around for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, we are really proud of our culture and really protective over our culture. And so,
it's a very unique thing. Because, like you said, other cultures have had years and years, and sometimes I feel like we are still defining what our culture is.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Even when you talk about, like, music, and when you talk about food, right? My roommate is Eritrean, so she's from East Africa, and, like, her traditions and her culture dates back to, like, the beginning of time, right?
It's very rich.
Yeah, so rich. And we don't have that, and we're kind of creating that for ourselves. So it's exciting, but it's also hard to watch people who have more power pick and choose what it is that they like about our culture and use it and pass it off as their own, when in reality, those are the same things that we have been made fun of or stereotyped about, and it was viewed as something that's bad or wrong. But then when somebody else does it, like cornrows, for example, it's trendy, it's fashion, you know? So what would be your hashtag on cultural appropriation?
That's such a good one. I would have to say, this is a really long hashtag, but it's 2019. We have Google. Figure it out.
Oh, that's funny. I like hashtag figure it out.
Figure it out. That's cute.
Yeah. Maybe like hashtag find your own swag. Hashtag.
Jasmine's in on this swag thing today.
Listen, I mean, honestly, I'd probably say something different, like another S word, but, you know, I'm keeping it PG for the people. But yeah, I think that would be mine.
Yeah, or hashtag woke. It's time to be woke.
It's
2019.
Yeah.
We have so many resources.
I know. So I'm excited to talk to Leslie today. So let's get into it,
and see what
she
has to say. Leslie is the Director of Communications for Empower Tanzania. So it will be awesome to see her outlook on some of these things.
For sure. Let's do it.
So today we are here with Leslie Klipsch, and she is the Director of Communications for Empower Tanzania. She is the host, or co-host, I should say, of Mama Bear Dares podcast, and she is the author of Mama Bear's Manifesto, A Mom's Group Guide to Changing the World. How are you doing today?
I'm great. I'm delighted to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming.
We're excited to have you.
So, can you just tell us a little bit about what it is that you do?
Yeah, I am going to start at the beginning, if you don't mind, because my career and what I do has been kind of a weaving journey a little bit. I have always loved books and writing, and I started my career in Chicago as a high school English teacher, which I loved. It was an incredible experience. And when my family and I moved to Iowa 12 years ago, I had two young boys, and we were going through a pretty intense adoption process. Mm-hmm. And so instead of going into the classroom, the traditional classroom again, I decided to try my hand at freelance writing and editing, and I taught some college classes online as well. And in the midst of all of this, I became really good friends with a group of women who ultimately it was my interaction with them that kind of led me to where I am today. So we were this group of moms. We had like 1,000 children between all of us. And we would get together and we would talk. We tried really to be intentional about talking about issues in the world. There's always a place to talk about parenting and, like, the best practices and, like, what stroller you should be using or whatever. But this group, we were really, really intentional about trying to discuss other issues and basically just the privileges that we had as moms at that time. Our kids had access to everything. They had access to food. That we had stable homes. They had clean water. And we felt really motivated to be able to share that with others. So we started learning about just issues that were happening in the world and kind of tuned in on the fact that at the time, 1 billion people didn't have access to clean water in the developing world. And we decided as a group to kind of just do something about this. And so the next 10 years, which leads me to today, we have raised in that period of time over $500,000 for clean water solutions in Liberia and Uganda and India and Tanzania. And this experience, walking through this with these women, has changed my life and changed my career. That's what led me to writing the book that I wrote about using that kind of power of the mom inside you, the force that we have as women in this world, and sharing that not just with our immediate family, but with the rest of the world as well. And so I wrote the book, of course, as a English teacher and as a writer and editor, I was taking notes this whole time. And so was so happy to be able to do that. And then we started a podcast that I co-host with my sister-in-law. And it really, that too, just encourages women to look beyond really just the care and the love that they have for their own children, but to let that extend to all the children, especially those who are on the margins. And then that work with Clean Water internationally led me to my current job, which is the director of communications for an NGO that works in East Africa, in especially the most rural areas of the country of Tanzania. So it was a winding road.
Right.
But here I am.
Yeah. It sounds like an amazing journey, and you have such good energy.
You do.
And I'm just happy that you're here and wanting to talk to us. Yeah, and the work that you do is so important, so thank you for that. So cultural appropriation is a huge, huge topic right now, especially here in our country. We're kind of like at a heightened sense of debate and diversity. And so cultural appropriation seems to be one of those topics that people have a lot to say, but we're kind of like at a disagreement on what exactly cultural appropriation is. And so I'm wondering what your specific definition of cultural appropriation is, and when does embracing others' cultures, including like hair, their music, and food, come cross the line from admiration to appropriation?
Yeah, it's definitely a big topic, and it's one that I actually think of fairly often because of my work in Tanzania, which is just this beautiful place, of just this hotbed of like makers and artisans that have just contribute this beautiful art to the world. And so I kind of come at the topic through really like the world of art and design a little bit. And I think in general, and that kind of is, I guess, the art and design aspect is like the probably least harmful, maybe most subtle ways that you can appropriate an entire culture. But I think the reason that people, it's on people's minds, and the reason that we need to be talking about it is because it's based in this power structure, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's always the dominant culture or the people in power that are taking from a culture that has been disempowered at some point. Mm-hmm. And so I do think, I love that this conversation is happening. I love that people are noticing. And putting it really simply, I think for me, it seems like cultural appropriation is when the person in power, the person who already has access to everything, is just grabbing and taking something else from another culture. And I don't have a lot of patience for that these days. Right. And I think that it's really damaging. And I think that, of course, we can do it unintentionally. But I think it's really important to be thoughtful about the things that we're consuming, the things that we're wearing, the styles that we're trying on, in order to be respectful of their origin.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you think that appropriation is based on intent?
I think sometimes it can be. Mm-hmm. I think that it can also be accidental, for sure. I mean, I was thinking about this, and when the movie Eat, Pray, Love came out, like, years ago, Elizabeth Gilbert's movie, I went with a group of friends to see the movie, and I wore a bindi, like the Indian like bead that's on the forehead. And I look back at that and I'm like, oh my gosh, I was totally appropriating that culture without thinking about it whatsoever. Yeah. I was going with a group of girls just thinking like we were being so cute and like this was my fashion accessory to see this movie. When really, like, in the Hindu culture, this is a sign of being married, and it's a sign of, like, as you step through the threshold of your husband's home, you hope that that you're ushering in prosperity. And so I knew none of that at the time. I just thought that it was really cute. And so I think that in some ways it can be something like innocent like that. But I think because we have access to so much information and so many people's stories, that we do have a responsibility as, you know, I personally, as like a white lady from Iowa, like, I can look these things up and make sure that I'm not offending anyone or appropriating someone's culture.
I love that. And I love that you say that, because it's important to understand and educate yourself about what cultural appropriation is. For me, being Black and being a part of and embracing Black culture, there are a lot of things happening right now, like with the Kardashians, who love to cornrow their hair, wear bamboo earrings. There was even a story the other day about a white woman who is selling these outrageously expensive silk bonnets.
Oh my gosh.
It was like a whole story about how she invented like this like new way of protecting your hair while you sleep. And I remember Black Twitter was not having it.
Black Twitter was not happy.
No, they're like, we could pick these up from the beauty supply for like $3. Like, what are you
not
talking
even
about?
$3,
not even
$1.
The ones with the design on them probably cost $3, right? And so it seems to be a sensitive topic for a lot of Black people specifically. Like how you said, historically, systematically, Black people in our culture have been taken away from us when we, I mean, it dates back to slavery, right? And we have kind of like developed our own new culture as African Americans, as Black people. And then when we see those things about our culture being represented by people who don't necessarily look like us, who don't really understand why we do it or where it comes from, it hurts, right? So I'm just wondering what you think, what your thoughts are on the Kardashians, who kind of illuminate Black culture and kind of like...
I cannot speak about the Kardashians. I am not cool enough to talk about the Kardashians. Like, definitely I'm not going to be able to give you, like, the specific, like,
no,
when
100%.
She did this, I was so angry. No, but, like, in general, when that happens.
Yeah.
Because, and I just want to keep saying this, like, you're going to screw up all the time. I screw up all the time. My husband, like, a couple years ago, not to throw him on the bus, but under the bus, but was like, oh, you should dreadlock your hair. And I'm like, no. And so, you know, that's that similar sort of thing of just, like, taking something from a group who is often, I mean, there's, like, rules in schools across the United States that you can't wear your hair like that. Like, right. African Americans are punished for that. And then right. when, you know, someone with my complexion dreads their hair, and I'm so sorry if I'm, maybe I'm not sorry if I'm offending people right now, but, like, it's, like, seen as cool or edgy or, like, you know? And so I think with whether you're Kim Kardashian or anyone else, just, first of all, just recognizing, like, this came from someone else's culture, and gosh, we've got plenty to work with. Like, you don't, because I am a white woman, I am not destined to just wearing, like, J. Crew sweater sets, even though I am wearing, like, kind of a sweater set today. But there's ways to express your own individuality and, whatever it is, in ways that is not grabbing from those other cultures. And again, it's just, I don't know. I would think that Kim Kardashian is aware of this. I'm not sure. Like, it goes back to that intent question, right. I guess. Like, does she not know, or does she know and not care?
Right. Right. And people will praise her for it. Well, you touched on a good point. Hair discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And recently California passed a law where you cannot discriminate against someone's hair texture when it comes to job opportunities and other things that they may be pursuing. And I just think it's so interesting that we have to have laws like this. But yes. You're right. So going back to the Kardashians for just a quick second, I remember one picture of Kylie Jenner where she was wearing a green, like a bright neon green bob. It was a wig. She always mm-hmm. changes her hair up with wigs. And I remember the response that people had to her having green, bright hair. And if that would have been on a black woman, I just wonder what the discussion would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's looked at as unprofessional. But when someone like a Kardashian does it, it turns into fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember there being a really big discussion about that, too. And then another instance that comes to mind when we're talking about people being punished for their hair and how they wear their hair, I think about the high school wrestler from New Jersey.
Yeah,
his name was Andrew Johnson, who had to cut off his dreadlocks. The ref told him to cut off his dreads or he couldn't wrestle. And I just think it's really interesting how someone's culture can turn into fashion if it's worn by someone else. But when they wear it, it has a completely different connotation.
Yeah. I remember that story and just being horrified by it, but also, like, you bring up this law in California, which I hadn't heard about, and I just can't believe we're in 2019 and
we have to have
like
law.
It's mind-blowing to me. And again, I think it is just that who's in power and who has, you know, the ability to like legislate someone's hair. Like, that just seems so crazy to me. I don't know. I guess that's why, like, you're doing a great thing by bringing this to people's attention and just having conversations about it. Because, I mean, maybe people just don't realize that seemingly, you know, I don't know what the ref was thinking that day, but clearly it wasn't terribly thoughtful or compassionate. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I don't want to make excuses for anyone, but I'm just like, maybe we're not thinking about it. Maybe we're not talking about this enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you, Jasmine, remember the tweet that went viral from this instance and the way that the reporter talked about the instance?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to touch on that for a second?
Yes, girl. So, first of all, the way I heard about the story was on Twitter, and it was the reporter who had been at the wrestling meet. Is it a wrestling meet? A wrestling match? Anyways, he was there. And he was praising the young man who was being a team player and who was who just like had a really good attitude. And I was just so upset because this young kid, this high schooler, just cut off all of his hair. And rather than saying this shouldn't have happened, he was like, oh, you're a good sport. Like, good job. Like, you did the right thing. You were doing this for your team. I'm like, no, he shouldn't have had to do this for his team. And the adults in the room, I don't know if his family was there, but his coach was there.
Yeah.
And nobody said anything. They just let him get his hair cut off. And my mama wouldn't have done that. She would have been like, oh, we're leaving. Okay? Like, it just wouldn't have happened. So I thought it was a really interesting thing, the way that the media was praising the young man, because what he did was brave, but it wasn't necessary.
Right.
And that's the way that the media, I think, and personally should have told the story.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's wild.
So what has been your favorite thing about working with Empower Tanzania? I'll just put a quick plug in. I took a few years of Swahili.
Oh, my God.
Don't remember much. I did.
That's amazing.
Say something.
I did. Hujambo.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey.
Right. It's like, Hujambo just means hello. Or is there any news with you? And then do you usually say, like, see Jambo?
Yeah, like when I'm there, definitely. I try to every once in a while.
Every once in a while, right? Yeah. But what has been your favorite thing about learning about Tanzania and the cultures that are there?
Oh, it is just, it's fascinating. I think probably the key lesson for me since I've started becoming interested in this part of the world in general. My daughter was born in Ethiopia, so I feel like East Africa has just been really a place that I've just been wanting to learn as much as I can about to understand her culture. And Tanzania, like many other countries, in developing nations, like, it has its share of problems, right? Like, the infrastructure is not great. Girls don't always get to go to school. There's major problems with the women's rights and things like that. And I feel like as Westerners, that's sort of what we hear a lot of that part of the world, or those the developing nations that are in the news occasionally. And so I think my favorite part of this job and this experience has just been really getting to see the incredible beauty of this place and the ingenuity and creativity and kindness and beauty of the people that I get to work with. I mean, that's hands down my favorite thing, is just the people that I get to work with there. And I just feel so lucky that I've gotten to get a little bit of an inside look of how they live and the beauty that they create. I mean, talking about cultural appropriation, we work with a tribe in Tanzania called the Maasai, and the Maasai they're like herders. They're kind of nomads. They are mostly in Tanzania and Kenya. Nearly 80% of the Maasai population in Kenya and Tanzania are living below the poverty line. And yet they have this really distinctive and like kind of iconic cultural brand. It's like a plaid, blues and reds and just super vibrant colors. And you see this, like, you have seen this at Target, like this kind of thing. And it hasn't been copyrighted. It hasn't been, like, their brand, like, Burberry can copyright their, like, plaid, right? Like, that's theirs. And if anyone uses it, they get kind of, like, royalties, or they get, you have to pay to use that, like, a licensing fee. And the Maasai, though, they are developing that now, but in 2012, Louis Vuitton did an entire runway show, like their entire fall line, using the Maasai patterns and the Maasai, that iconic classics, iconic Maasai style. And they made millions of dollars from that, and the Maasai got nothing. So that, in terms of cultural appropriation, and what we find attractive and what, you know, we're willing to spend money on, so often comes from these very people that Empower Tanzania is working with, you know. And And that has been really troubling, too, of just seeing that happen in the way we shop and what we wear. I talked earlier about just, like, the art and design aspect of cultural appropriation, and I think that's something that we see more often than we even realize, probably, of corporations taking designs from Indigenous people and then profiting from it without them benefiting at all.
Definitely. And I think that goes back to where that line is from admiration to appropriation.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
100%. Yeah. 100%. You talked a little bit about going through the adoption process. Mm-hmm. I was adopted. My mom's in the room, so I'm, like, making eye contact with her. Hey, can you tell us a little bit about your daughter?
Oh, she's amazing. I would love to tell you about Sintayu. She's been at camp the last week, and I was, like, yesterday going to pick her up, like, I'm looking at your mom also because you get this, like, just butterflies in my stomach. I was so excited to see her. She is just joy all the time. Like, she has just brought so much joy to our lives. She's just a beautiful spirit. Yeah, the adoption process was difficult, but also really beautiful. We actually just had the chance this summer. We were in Ethiopia visiting her birth family, which has been a very interesting kind of international open adoption experience. And I'm just, again, just so grateful that she entered our life. The impetus was we had two biological sons, and in the midst of that, I had gone through some health problems and wasn't sure that I would be able to have our second son. And just my whole family, we have a history of adoption in our family. It just was something that really stuck. And I think my husband and I always knew that it's something we wanted to pursue if possible. And boy, we won the jackpot with Sintayu.
I love that. And I appreciate that. You said that, like, she's the joy of your life. I really love that. I'm sure my mom feels the same. Like, when I came in, she was just like, wow, my whole life is complete.
Sure. I'm just kidding. Maybe.
Wow. No, I'm sure she felt the same. Right, Mom? Yeah, she just blew me a kiss. That's right. Thumbs up. Two thumbs up for me, right? No,
this
but I love
has
that.
Been such an insightful conversation. Thank you for everything that you've had to offer. It's been really great. I have one more question for you. So, Love Girls, the LOVE is actually an acronym, and it stands for Lead, Overcome, Value, and Empower. So my question for you is, what does LOVE stand for you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to talk to you guys today. It's been so much fun. So I'm maybe not terribly original here, but L, I would say not only love, but, like, leading with love. I think we all have this agency within us that we have a choice. Like, we can do things just kind of status quo just to get the day done, or we can really choose to be leaders in whatever it is, where no matter what your job is or what you're pursuing, you can take the lead. You can be a leader. And I think it's important for women to hear that. And always leading with love, like leading with love and compassion at the end of the day. You know, there's a lot of choices we'll face, and it might not even have the right answer. There might be lots of answers, but choose the one that is the most loving and compassionate. For O, I would say maybe outrageous. I love
that. I do too.
I love, like, superlatives. I love going, you know, if you're gonna do something, you might as well do it huge. Like, be outrageous in your love and anything to do. If you like talking to each other and, like, meeting for coffee, then start a podcast. Like, do it big, right? Like, do it. and then that. V, you said the Love Girls V was value, which I actually wrote down also. Is that, can I say value?
Yeah, absolutely. You can say whatever you want.
So, yeah, just valuing just the beauty and dignity and humanity of everyone around you. Everyone has this innate value that is just precious, and I think we need to focus on that a little bit more. even as we're thinking of just little topics like cultural appropriation, like we, with the value of other human beings in mind, that can inform all of our decisions, whether we're talking about, you know, what we're putting on in the morning or how we're wearing our hair or whatever it is, like be thinking about just not just you, but the value of others as well. And then E, I stole this from your producer, is evolving. And I think it's just you always want to look forward. Always, you know, I feel like if I were the same person that I was 10 years ago, I'd be a little disappointed in myself. Like, I want to just continue to grow and evolve and just be the best that I can be at any given moment. Always learning.
Well, Leslie, you have been a joy.
Thank you so much
appreciate you being here and laughing with us and talking to us. Cultural appropriation is not an easy topic, but you are so graceful, and we appreciate all of your wisdom. Yes, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
And thank you for waking us up just a little bit more.
Energy is contagious for sure, so we appreciate that.
Good. Well, I love what you're doing, and I just thank the world of both of you. So thanks so much for this opportunity.
To stay up to date with everything that Leslie shared with us today, you can find her at Mama Bear Dares on Facebook and on your podcast streaming sites.